joining us now to talk about what we do and don't know about this chemical and its possible health effects is Dr. Chris Thayer. Dr. Thayer is a staff scientist with the National Toxicology Program at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Dr. Thayer, thanks for joining Living on Earth.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, remind us why there is suspicion that C8 or PFOA and these related chemicals, why do we think they might pose health risks?
Well, it's really a combination of factors. You know, anytime you have a chemical that combines this level of environmental persistence, widespread detection in people, and toxicity based on laboratory animal studies, you're going to be concerned. So some of the health effects that the laboratory animals highlight are increased mortality, reduced growth, delays in sexual maturation, liver toxicity, effects on lipid metabolism, as well as effects on the immune and hormone systems, especially when exposure occurs during development.
Now, these are things that have already shown up in previous animal studies?
Right. All of these health effects are based on laboratory animal studies. The health effects based on human studies, those studies are not deemed adequate to make concisive or clear conclusions about human health risk. And they're not being used in EPA's risk assessment for PFO because they're not deemed adequate for those purposes.
Now, why is it that these perfluorinated chemicals, especially this one, C8, why is it that they seem to stick around in our bodies for so long? It seems like if you were to be exposed, you know, it would get flushed out along with everything else. Why not?
Well, you know, you're right. Once in the body, PFOA tends to last for years. And unlike other persistent chemicals such as DDT, PCBs, or dioxins that tend to like the fat, PFOA likes the blood. And it apparently binds to proteins that are found in the blood and just keeps circulating through the blood.
Does that raise a different set of concerns for you and other scientists looking at this, that it's hitching a ride through the blood system rather than sitting more or less idle in fat cells?
To some extent, I mean, it suggests that there's going to be widespread exposure of a variety of tissues, and perhaps that's why in the laboratory animal studies you see a pretty broad range of effects.
And of those effects in the animal studies that you mentioned, are there some that are of greater concern than others?
Really, at this point, we are focusing mostly on potential health impacts that stem from exposures in utero and early in life.
And why is that?
And so, because based on the animal studies, what we saw in animals that were exposed early in life is increased mortality, the delays in sexual development, reduced growth, along with other effects. And some of these effects were only observed in animals that were exposed in development and not animals that had only been exposed as adults. And so the NTP is conducting a class study to include PFOA along with related compounds that's really going to be focused primarily on evaluating the potential health effects stemming from in utero exposure and early life exposures.
NTP is National Toxicology Program, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so this is a pretty big study. What's the goal there?
Well, the goal of our study, let me back up. So people aren't just exposed to PFOA. They're also exposed to other perfluorinated chemicals. And for this reason, the EPA asked the National Toxicology Program to conduct a class study that includes PFOA along with related chemicals to see the extent to which they share a common toxicity profile. And so NTP is undertaking this effort. I believe we have seven chemicals, including PFOA, that we expect to test in developmental exposure, so where the animals will be exposed in utero and early in life.
Well, this is interesting. One of the criticisms that I hear from some people in the environmental community especially is that there's a tendency to kind of focus on one chemical at a time in health studies, I guess, or in the regulatory process, when, in their opinion, we should be looking at a whole batch of related, say a family of chemicals that share some very common attributes. That's exactly what you're doing here, right?
That's exactly what we're trying to do, because the question, one of the outstanding questions for EPA is, should these chemicals be considered as a group in any sort of risk assessment? EPA does this for certain dioxin-like chemicals as well as organophosphates. So should they be doing this for the perfluorinated chemicals? And we know this is a question now. So the studies undertaken by the National Toxicology Program are really designed to address the extent to which these chemicals share a similar toxicity profile. And if they do, what are the relative potencies between them?
I want to go back earlier to back up a little bit to this earlier point you made about the in utero exposure being of special concern. We know from data that the company collected that this chemical does pass through the blood of a mother to the fetus. What are the special concerns when that happens, either in an animal or a person? What are the kind of things you start looking for?
Well, many of the endpoints that have been reported in laboratory animals focused on was there early in life mortality, and for PFOA there was. There's also delays in sexual maturation. There were effects reported on the immune system, but although it's unclear whether that was a result of only early in life exposure, since those animals were also exposed in early adulthood. To my knowledge, there are no human studies that address developmental and reproductive effects.
I'm hoping you can kind of give us a general overview of what's the general status of the science on this chemical. Is it fairly well understood, or are we really just getting started here in understanding how this chemical operates in our bodies?
Well, what we know is that PFOA is very persistent in the environment, and it's widely detected in people. Once in the body, it appears to last for years. We know that it likes blood. We know something about concern for health effects based on the laboratory animal studies that reveal increased mortality, reduced growth, liver toxicity, effects on the immune and hormone systems. But we really don't know what impact this has for people, in part because the existing studies that are out there that have been looked at in workers are really inadequate to make clear conclusions about impacts on human health. So I would say, in terms of what we don't know whether PFOA poses a hazard to humans. We don't know if human exposure levels are of concern, and that could extend to workers who are exposed to PFOA in chemical plants, or for people who live in communities near chemical plants that use PFOA, or the general population. We don't know whether the laboratory animal studies are relevant for predicting human effects necessarily. We don't know exactly how people are being exposed to PFOA, and of the suggested sources, we don't know their relative contribution to human blood levels.
That sounds like a lot of questions still hanging out there. How long before we're able to know whether or not we can tell consumers this stuff is okay?
Well, the National Toxicology Program, we're really in the fairly early stages of initiating our study to design. So we would expect to have results from our studies in the next 1 to 5 years, depending on the specific study. The longer-term animal studies will take several years. But I understand that there are efforts that are not occurring within the National Toxicology Program, but occurring with industry to better evaluate the sources of exposure and relative contribution of those sources of exposure to human blood levels.
Now, this is an unfair question of sorts because, to correct the situation I'm posing here, you'd have to have a time machine. But It's kind of a shame that we're setting out on these major studies to answer these questions after the stuff is out there in almost everyone's blood. It sure would have been nice to know this stuff before it got in our blood. What lessons can we take from that?
Well, I think some of these lessons we have learned. I think that if a brand new chemical was was presented to EPA for approval today and it displayed the same level of persistence, that would be a clear red flag. You know, that red flag might not have been raised when PFO was first introduced. But I think that the persistence now, I think that we have a better appreciation for how important a factor that is, that if you have a chemical that's very persistent, then you better be pretty sure you understand something about the potential health effects. I think we are doing a better job at catching the new persistent chemicals. I would not call PFOA a new chemical. It might be too new to us, but it's been used for over 50 years.
We've been talking with Dr. Chris Thayer, a staff scientist with the National Toxicology Program at the NIEHS. That's the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Well, thanks for taking time to join us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.